认可的这个感觉。
Oh, we're off. Hey, and we're back. The Battery Pod. We got a new installment, Battery Talks with the boys. Logue, what is this installment?
Oh, passing it off to me right out of the gate.
Right out of the gate.
Yeah. I mean, this is just us talking about topics, I think, is like the real thing that we wanted to do here. We were talking about this before. We shortened the episodes to keep it just with the interviews, and then we lost all of our limelight, and we're like, how do we get our limelight back? So our decision was that we're just going to hog the spotlight for ourselves for, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it may be. And we're going to talk about some topics that we think are important to know and things that we all kind of know pretty well. So, I mean, ultimately, RJ has expertise, Isaiah has expertise, I have expertise somewhat in different aspects of baseball. So this is where we're going to talk about those aspects of baseball.
Love it. Topic number one, ramping up for throwing.
Building a ramp.
Yep. I feel like that's something that was relevant for right now. So why not kind of start off with the first one with that, you know? I know like it was kind of a funny process going through the whole thing. This is my first year of actually kind of taking the reins on it myself, but obviously like done enough throwing programs.
First off, what is it? What are we building a ramp up? What does ramp up mean?
I mean, it could be viewed as, I guess, I mean, if you ask me what it is, it's like getting ready for like bullpens and live and things like that. But I mean, that doesn't go without saying you don't need the base for it first, right? So it's just getting ready for the season straight up. Any way you can, whether you're even a position guy, it's all kind of the same stuff. You just need to make sure that you're set up with enough, good enough of a base to kind of be ready to put your body through the stress throughout the year, throughout the season. And I guess, I mean, I don't even know where I start with this whole thing.
First thing, what does your season look like? Right.
Yeah, I
guess
like,
so. Are you, if you're a pitcher, let's just keep it with pitchers, I think.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
For the most part. Yeah. Are you a once a week guy? Are you a reliever? Like, are you playing pro ball where you're every 5 days? Are you a college guy where you pitch every once a week? Are you a high school guy where you pitch randomly all the time? Like,
yeah.
And that's a great question. I don't think there's really much of a difference as to how like you can train for this. You know, I think it's what time you have available, because it does take a lot of time. And that's something that I noticed throughout my college career was like, we got 15, 20 minutes to throw, you know what I'm saying? And I don't know, Wedge, you might even be able to like agree to that. Cause I mean, you went university, same with you, Isaiah, where like pitching didn't really come first for like, cause I like to long toss, right? Some guys don't like to long toss, but nowadays, especially it's like a lot of guys want their plyo balls and things like that. And like a proper warm up for pitching. Cause you need to do two warm ups. There's not just one warm up for everyone. Right. So, but the way I looked at it for this season, it's like, okay, I talked with the manager and we both agreed that if we bring in like dude arms, then I can play like a utility kind of pitcher where it's like, if we have a check guy on the mound and we grab a lead, I can go bam. And I'll just close out that game, try to keep it under a reasonable pitch count, and then go the next day and close out that one when one of our imports are on the mound. But that didn't really change the way I was looking at going into this season and preparing for the off season. It was more, okay, how many days a week can I throw? When do I need to be in a game? And when do I think is an appropriate time to be off the mound? So let's just start from there, all right? So I kind of gave myself about, how many weeks here? 8 weeks, so like 2 months of throwing. 2 months of throwing, and we went bananas with it. Looking back on it, I think I will shorten it. With the days of throwing. And it's funny, Isaiah and I, we had this conversation. I want to ask you about this again. What'd you call it? Your baseline, right? You don't want to dip too far below your baseline, right?
Yeah, we're just talking about baseline performance and where you come in. So when RJ starts his on-ramp, we have a baseline of performance. And his throwing program, it has to be in line with that baseline. And when we drop down, so when I talk about dropping below that baseline, think of, you know, I have a high volume day or a high stress day with a bullpen. The arm is tired, it's fatigued. If you were to go and throw that next day, you're actually below that baseline. So it's kind of an art from me and RJ's perspective on managing his stressors and just trying to figure out, number one, we're always going to go that below that baseline. That's what stress does. That's what working out does. It breaks the tissue down. But yeah, so our goal is, you know, how can we bring them below that baseline, but then have them recover and rebound quick? Because I mean, injuries throughout the season is usually sort of that lack of preparation period. And that's what these 8 weeks are about. And that's what, I mean, this whole podcast episode is about.
Right.
For someone who may not know, i.e. me, what's a baseline? What does that mean?
So when just a baseline of performance. So, yeah. So RJ threw his velo? First. Yeah, sure. You could use velo as a baseline. So RJ's first bullpen was 85. And again, you have Rap Soto over there, fancy guy, which I mean, I think we do too, but I don't know how to read it. So, like there's different metrics you can use for performance. I mean, think of a weight room as well. What's my power clean? What's my hex bar deadlift? Yeah. Whatever it may be, but.
Right. So going into this, was trying to figure out what, like, cause again, I've thrown enough throughout my career where it's like, I know what too much would be and what an appropriate amount would be for just, again, sticking around feeling good the whole time. There were for sure times, I think I talked to Isaiah about this, where I was like, man, I'm fucking done. Like my arm is dead as hell. And I had to take some time off, right? That was my regression. I had a little regression. But so talking about the actual planning, what we wanted this whole thing to be about was trying to find a mix between how many times can I throw that week and be in the gym and to get the most out of it. There are many ways you can go about it. I went long toss program this year because I haven't done it in a while. And I remember when I did do it, I really enjoyed it. So I started by looking at, actually, I think it was Isaiah, didn't you give me the Jaeger Sports? Or was it Braden Allman? Braden Allman gave it to me a while ago. Gave me the link to Jaeger Sports. And then on there, they have a free program, 8 weeks ramp up with the spring training stuff for pro people. And it tells you every day, every week, what you're doing. And so I just went, okay, well, he's one of the best in the biz at throwing. So why not just kind of go with that and go from there? And that was the start of it. And I didn't need to think about the bullpen stuff because I went, okay, on the Jaeger Sports, they have it from, let's just say it's from second week of January, and it goes for 2 months after that. Okay. And then it has you go onto the mound after that. And it has, it's like, what is it? So 5 days, 6 days a week of throwing. And it starts off super small. Like you should, you don't need to blow it up, right? Especially out of the gate. So started at 45 to 90 feet. And then after week six, man, we were at 300 feet. And it felt normal though, you know, it was fine because the buildup was necessary and the buildup was solid. One thing that was frustrating for the young guys was they wanted to throw more, you know, it's like, no, I'm feeling good today. It's like, okay, save it for tomorrow. Like we have tomorrow. We have the next day after that. We have the day after that. It's fine. Like read the schedule, man. Look, it's right here in front of you. Wrote it out for those guys. And then, I mean, by the seventh and eighth week, we were able to just rip it. Like it was full long toss. I think we were over 330 feet now. I think I think our probably record, probably 350 to 360, probably around there, which felt pretty cool. I mean, especially being a lefty too, with movement left to right, a lot of right to left. It was kind of nice to put one up in the air, aiming way off to the side, and it just kind of rolls back into them. It felt pretty cool. But then leading into the actual ramp up, on-ramp stuff, that was when it got really fun, you know, because again, we're off the mound now. We're off the mound. And after I had my regression, kind of realizing, okay, I think we're throwing a ton, took it back a notch. Now that we're throwing, our arms are in great shape. We went, instead of going every day, you know, so for instance, like week eight was full long toss. Week seven's the best example. 250 feet, full long toss. Recovery at 200. Full long toss, recovery at 200, full long toss. And then the Sunday was the optional day, but that's our velo day. So again, there's another throwing day. I was like, holy smokes. So then leading up into the on-ramp itself, and I feel like I'm just talking, 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 and it's boring and I understand it. But leading up into the up into the mound work, that's when it got fun because again we were able to sit down together and kind of assess a little bit and say, okay, do you think we threw too much? And Potsy, he's a psychopath, said, well, I think we're okay. And that was rhetorical.
So
We did
if
we
he says it, then
yeah.
probably
Yeah, I
the
was like,
opposite.
yeah, he's the opposite. So I was like, oh, it was rhetorical, Pots. Like, we're gonna take it down a notch because we're gonna have harder intent days. Because again, when you're throwing 300 feet consistently, you don't have to put too much effort into it. You know, you can really just put a serious arc on it. And then when you're full, and then when you're pulling it back down, you're going 10 feet at a time. So I mean, you know, it's nothing bananas, and you kind of ballpark 10 feet. Sometimes it's 20. It just depends on how you're feeling. But if I
And
can offer,
RJ,
sorry.
I think what's really cool about what you're saying is, you know, some guys might choose plyo balls, some guys might choose that long toss route. And hopefully through this discussion, I mean, every body's built different, every arm's built different, every athlete is younger, older, recovers better. Especially Canadian athletes who are stuck in the snow, like they probably can't throw 330 feet. So how can we help them build a program around plyo balls or even throwing 90 feet with different levels of intent? And yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously I'm biased towards the weight room, but when you start your off-season program, like we're not going in there doing one rep maxes. We're going in there slowly ramping up, getting the body prepared for the season. Because it's funny, at the end of the day, like you're a professional baseball player, not a professional weightlifter. So I think for me, athletes usually think, hey, more is better. I need to push more. And something me and RJ did sort of as he's ramping up is we actually pulled back on weight training volume. So sort of as season ended in October, that's when we were going 4, 5, 6 days a week in the weight room. So we ramped up in the weight room there. And then as he started getting into baseball mode, we actually pulled back to, you know, 3 days a week. And again, that's because his arm is his job. That's how he puts food on the table. I don't need to go and over fatigue him. I need him to be really good on the baseball field. But yeah, no, I just wanted to say, I mean, hopefully those listening can understand that, like, you need to know your body. You need to listen to it, take notes on it, like what works, what doesn't. RJ's 29. Played a lot of baseball and he kind of knows what works for him. So hopefully you listening to this conversation can understand that too.
How
All right.
similar is a workout regime and that kind of thing to a throwing program in terms
What
of the fabric of how you build it?
what's crazy is, and that's one thing I learned from our guys down here, like we're such a comprehensive system. Like you come in and train with us, but our training is also built around your throwing program, your hitting volume, and all that stuff. If you think of an arm, a rotator cuff, a scap, whatever you're thinking about, those things are muscles, they're bones, they recover and adapt the exact same way. So when I stress a muscle out in the weight room, it's the exact same as stressing a muscle out, throwing a ball. So like a 6 ounce ball might be adding weight to the bar. So it's very similar. So I need to monitor volume, you know, over the week. So just like RJ said, you know, one day I'm throwing 90 feet and I'm pulling back, letting that arm recover. Next day I'm 200 plus. Maybe I have a bullpen. The day after I'll pull back. And again, if you're a reliever versus a starter, I mean, I know what day I'm gonna throw every week if I'm a starter. If I'm a
Correct.
reliever, and again, am I a college player where I have 4 games in a row, or am I a big leaguer where I got 6 games spread out through the week? And that reliever in the big leagues probably needs like 3 10 to 15 pitch bullpens rather than 1 40 pitch bullpen during the on-ramp part. But yeah, they're very similar, which is something I had no clue until I was down here.
Well, and see, that's been the fun thing about doing your program too, is it's not just, I want to call them meathead workouts, you know, but they're a lot more, it's smart. Everything that I've been training has been like almost like a direct correlation to like being off the mound and, you know, even hitting side of it too. It's amazing how much better my hips feel getting through a ball, for instance. And it's like, I remember before it was a bit labored. I had to force that thing through there, but my hands and everything else when I'm pitching and stuff, it feels nice. Feels really nice, and I feel faster, especially all the counterbalance stuff that you've had me doing. The counterweight, even like a landmine, right? And you always have the one arm exchange it with the other.
Yeah.
And then I've kind of been able to watch some video, and I'm like, when I'm pitching, my front side exchanging with my arm is so much faster than I think I've ever seen it. And I'm
Yeah.
like, oh, that's kind of cool to see, actually. So, I mean, and that's kind of the confidence part too, right? Because I mean, if you take care of the weight room and you take care of the throwing, then, injuries aside, you should be okay, right? And then now it's time for when we actually got onto the mound. I mean, it was no problem at all. My shoulder was dead the next day, but I wasn't sore, if that makes any sense. You know what I mean? Like, I think so. Again, so we did this. So what we scheduled basically was Monday. We gave ourselves an off day. Said, don't even touch a ball. Like, we're good. We know that we're in shape. We're not in a hurry. We have a month still, basically, a month and change, month and a half until we actually need to pitch in some spring training stuff. So Mondays are off, recovery, and then a bullpen, and then Thursday's recovery, Friday's a full long toss, Saturday's recovery, Sunday's a big boy day with a full long toss, the plyos, the whole thing, the bullpen as well, and a velo day on the bullpen. So, but we're not worried about this at all. We went into this whole thing 100% for the bullpens. We didn't start off like, oh, here's 70%, week one, then 80% week two. Because again, Isaiah, I talked to you about this, but I would much rather, and I think it makes sense in my head. I think it makes sense from all the pens I've thrown. I think if you start off early with like a spot pen, it's useless in my opinion. Because you've been training, and because like if you're gonna throw
What's a
max,
spot pen?
just like a
Just like a
field,
non-scheduled pen?
no, sorry, wrong word, a field pen, field pen,
A field pen?
field pen. So like you just go in there and you're like, 70%, just touch and feel changeups and shit like that. It's like, man, you've just been long tossing. Like full long toss is 100% effort. You know what I mean? You can just rip back, try and be loose and free and fast, but it's still 100% effort if you're trying to throw the shit out of this thing. So like, why won't I try to like integrate what I've been doing for long toss to get this ball over 330 onto the mound now and see if I can translate it, right? So that I don't have to worry about this disconnect that I have all of a sudden where it's like, man, how come I can't get my running guns, or why can't I throw like I do my full long toss like I do on the mound? I think it's easier if you just go in there 100% because your arm's in shape. You're not going to hurt yourself at this point from like, you're not going to stretch strain something. It's way harder to throw on a flat ground than it is on a declined surface. I don't know what the physics of that, but I feel like it's easier by less stress too. I don't know. To me, it makes sense.
I think the
Using
key
your
point
skills.
you said, the key point there was you said your arm was ready. So you had spent that 8 weeks prior getting your arm right to get on the mound so that you could go 100%. And that 100% for RJ is more like a 90, 95 relaxed and whippy.
Right.
But if you're, I mean, you don't know what you don't know for some of the people listening, but if you didn't have that 8 week on ramp period, then maybe like a 70, 80% pen just to get things going. Just like we talked about the weight room, I'm not going to
Yeah.
1RM that first week.
Right.
But if you were smart and had that 8 week, on ramp before bullpens, then yeah, 100%. Why wouldn't you try and emulate what you're going to have in the game? But it's just,
Right.
yeah, where you're at. What do you think, Wedge?
So my thoughts are, how do we specialize this for a demographic that we're probably going to get, which I would assume would be high school, college, right? So for, and let's start with high school. I know through the high school age that I work with that we have limitations, and those limitations lead to a difficulty in creating a consistent throwing program. And one of those limitations right now, and I mean, that's not really, it's not going to be a limitation forever, but it's fucking COVID. And it's time, right? So those two limitations are really difficult, like for a kid to be able to do this. And my thoughts are, like, let's say they have 5 hours, 6 hours a week, 6 hours a week sporadically, maybe 3 days with your team. Okay. So if you have 6 hours a week with your team, let's say, I'll just use our example for my team. We have 2 hours of baseball, 1 hour of lifting on Tuesdays, 2 hours of baseball, 1 hour of lifting on Thursdays, and then 1.5 hours of baseball on Saturdays. That's our team functions right now, outside on Saturdays where they do some long toss and stuff like that outside. And then Tuesday, Thursday right now for the pitchers, like we're going live on live next week. So
Yeah, saw
it's
that.
and so my thoughts are, if we can rewind time, right? and go back to, let's say, January 1st, knowing that we have now or next week, mid-February, so 6 weeks, to be able to go, right? Because we could talk about now being February, you know, it's February 7th when we're recording this. If we're going 6 weeks from now, we're beginning, like, the, you could call it spring training, right?
Sure.
Like, we're playing exhibition games outside, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So if we can rewind to January 1st, and how should their last 6 weeks have looked if you're only practicing 6 hours a week, and how can you better maximize your time? What can you do if you're a kid that is only actually able to be in a building with your team 6 hours a week? How do you do that?
That's a tough one. I was there in Vancouver at Five Tool and Jay's place. And I mean, that's a tough call, because again, I think, but man, one of the things that was frustrating was it's like, okay, just throw up into the net.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, what am I trying to do? How long am I going to do it for? Right. I think if you were to rewind it, and if I'm going forward for myself, I'm probably going to use this distance thing more. It's going to be more time oriented than it is rep oriented. Because like, you can tell a kid to throw 45 to 90 feet for, and it's only going to be 5 to 7 minutes. You know what I mean? 5 to 10 minutes. Okay. You're done throwing for the day. That's perfect. Line three up on the one side, or you can line up, you can pull up that middle cage and just get them. You can get everyone throwing as much as you want to, and you can get probably 30 throws in there. And that's all you really need on, you know, early on. I mean, we're talking like, you know, 45 to 90. The longest it takes us right now to throw outside, and that's, you know, us sailing a ball over the fence or whatever it might be, dude, we're only throwing for 20 minutes, probably. You know what I mean? Every time. So yeah. it's not like the throwing takes the most time. In fact, the thing that takes the longest is the plyos. The plyos
the
takes
pre
the,
and
the pre right. the re only takes about 10 minutes, but the, right. it's the pre. The pre takes forever, especially with the on ramp stuff. So I mean, going forward for the 6 weeks until season, I mean, shit, I don't know, man. That's a tough one.
It doesn't have to be like, you don't need to plan one out right now. But what I'm more asking is like, how can they do it for themselves, and what can they do for themselves to be able to make this, like, bridge those days in the middle?
I got you.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, again, if there's one thing we saw from COVID was that everyone got pretty damn creative, right? So go out and get yourself some tap balls and take care of your plyos at home.
Throw your mattress up.
Throw the mattress up. Say, hey, hey, mom and dad, earmuffs. I'm going to throw some shit out of a mattress here for the next 20 minutes. And again, and the best thing about the driveline stuff, the plyo stuff, is you can find it for free online. It's all online. I didn't have to pay for anything for all this stuff. A lot of it was just kind of using my head and talking to the guys like, hey, this is what I have planned. This is what they have scheduled. What do you think about the weights of the plyos? And then, for instance, dude, like week one, it has you throwing like a black something for a pivot pick. And I'm like, well, let's not start there. Reverse throws, for instance, with a 1 kilogram ball. I was like, let's not start there. Let's start with the blue instead. Well, yeah, because I mean, and we're also talking about people that have never actually been taught how to do it properly.
Yeah.
Right. So again, if you get someone to do it with the green, which what happened to me, I strained my elbow because I was throwing with my tricep and shuttling the ball instead, and I hurt my forearm because of it. But then I learned how to do it properly, which again is so important to figure out. For all the coaches listening, if you don't actually fully understand what you're talking about, go onto YouTube, find Tread Athletics, find Driveline, and they'll literally break down exactly what you're looking for and how to do it properly. Because I can throw a black ball now, and I'm not even fucking phased about it, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think for those kids, the way to bridge it, the best way to also keep yourself healthy, but also to keep getting better too, is to pay attention to what you're doing with the plyo in your hand. Isaiah and I have talked about this. Isaiah actually was the guy who kind of got me back on track a little bit here, because he said that when he watched the pro guys throw plyos down where he's at right now, he said it looked so fluid and technical, and just they knew what they were doing. It was from the ground up. You know, they saw every motion they were trying to go for. And I thought to myself, well, I'm having some mechanical difficulties in my lower half, so let's go online and find something that I can do to benefit that. And then I really started thinking, okay, I'm going to start from the first variation. And it's as simple as having your elbow up, shooting your hips, like corkscrewing your back knee in, blocking your front side, and there's the ball. I'm like, oh, I actually felt separation in my pec. That's what I'm looking for. Holy shit. Okay, let's go back online, find more stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of kids, Wedge will go to you, or Isaiah, they go to you. They come to me. They go, how do I throw harder? Like, well, I've been watching your reps, man. They're pretty shit. You know? you're also not in the weight room. Okay, that's another strike. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, you just don't throw enough, honestly, you know? So I know, for instance, like here we have 4 days a week and it's kind of like you have an hour and a half. And I've taken the road of quality over quantity, and I'm going to see how that goes. You know, so on today, for instance, they threw 15 minutes. I think it was nice and easy because Sunday we bullpened, right? So I wanted to do it today. They ran a little bit today. You did some arm care every time. And then it works out. And then tomorrow is going to be even quicker amount of throwing, probably 5 minutes of throwing. Tomorrow. Right. Wednesday is going to be a big throwing day, big hitting day. Thursday, light throwing day, big fielding, big hitting day. And then Sunday rolls around, it's all throwing. You know what I'm saying? I just try and like match my days appropriately. So it's like a light Monday. It sounds
exactly like matching how you lift. Like,
dude, it's
today I'm going to do chest and try. Tomorrow I'm going to do legs.
Don't say chest and try.
Sorry.
God dang, Wedge.
What do you say? Push day?
You're skinny. You're supporting the
meathead.
Yeah, the meathead.
Yeah.
The meathead.
That's all guy. I see at Sports Central, man.
Chest buys, back tries.
Hey, what's the name of that big leaguer who's rehabbing and he's like big biceps, big paycheck.
That was
Aaron Loop. Aaron Loop.
Oh my god.
That's what you told us that.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That was such a funny story.
That's funny. Wedge, I was, go ahead, RJ.
Finish. Oh, no, but Wedge makes a great point. Yeah, you match it like you do lifting days, honestly. I kind of looked at it and I thought to myself, okay, if we're going to go hard on Sunday, and I want them to go hard now because we've been throwing since January, so I feel confident, you know, with exception of a couple weeks of COVID and Christmas and stuff like that, whatever it may have been. You know, it's light Monday and then hard Wednesday, light Thursday, hard Sunday. And that makes sense to me because, again, I'm confident with where they're at swinging the bat. I'm getting more confident with them in regards to fielding, a little bit more confident. They don't have my full confidence yet. I've seen some belligerent things out there. But again, if there's the base, right? We started throwing in January and it was a small buildup. It was, hey, guys, like, know your body. I got rattled at kids for throwing it hard early. I was like, listen, like, I'm not going to hear your shit if your arm hurts later. I'm not going to hear it, right? But now I want them, it's like, hey, I had to fly a little bit today. Let's see it. How hard can you throw it today?
Yeah.
You know?
We're thinking long term, right? This isn't a today thing.
I'm thinking long term.
Yeah.
Because, again, this is a 15U team. None of them are going to be pumping 80. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But if we can, I've been thinking to myself, if they can throw strikes, if they can throw easier, like with less, you know what I'm saying? Like more fluid and less effort, then to me, that's a gain. That's a win because that furthers them further in their career than today.
Yeah.
And honestly, the ball takes care of itself if you're throwing strikes. But so that's what I thought.
I'm wondering, as a person who programs for a living, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have, let's call it a recipe or a step-by-step process, like this is step one, this is step two, this is step three, of how to build one of those? And RJ, actually, just a follow-up question, how many days do you not throw at all?
Right now, one.
1 day per week, you not throw at all?
Yeah, Monday.
So what do you say to a kid who says, my arm's sore, can I not throw today?
Go to a plyo. No, I'm kidding. Where does it hurt? Where does it hurt?
Where? Okay. And if they say, in my arm.
No, like, I say,
my
fine,
point is,
Timmy.
Like,
yeah.
Kids don't really know, right? Like, they...
Yeah.
The conversation of pain versus sore. That's a tough conversation to learn.
It's a hard one, yeah.
So, and when you're sore, do you throw still? Like, or does your intent change, you know? Like,
no. Myself, personally, it depends on the day, right? If it's a recovery day, absolutely. You better believe I'm only throwing 90 feet.
Yeah, but you're throwing.
Know?
Like, your recovery isn't doing nothing.
No. Because, I mean, I'm a firm believer. If it ain't hurt, then, I mean, dude, you can work through it. Just take it easy, right? Listen to your body. If your body's sore and you need to take an entire week of just kind of like, you know, lightly playing catch, kind of getting yourself back into it. Because, I mean, half the time, these kids are probably just, especially early on, if you decide just to blow it out, then your arm's going to be sore from fatigue. Like, it's just like that achy, shitty feeling. You know what I mean? you stop throwing it aches. Like I had that a few times and I was like, fuck, all right, I'm gonna get my 8 hours of sleep, wake up in the morning and roll tide.
Actually, Isaiah, before you answer the question I asked before, I listened to a Cressy podcast one time and he was talking to, I can't remember the guest, but they were talking about icing. What do you guys do about icing? Do you guys ice? Do you encourage icing or what?
Oh dude, you're opening up the can of worms.
I know.
You're opening. Let's attack the other subjects first.
Okay, all right. Yeah. I think let's talk.
Yeah, you do have a process though, Isaiah.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I exactly kind of what, you know, RJ attested to what you said is there's a huge difference between pain versus soreness. Is that thing sharp? Is it in the UCL? Where is it at? And sometimes I'll be like, you know, have you ever had a heavy lift and the next day you're like, oh, I can't even sit on the toilet. Right? My legs hurt. We've all had that. So are you that kind of sore? Are you more of like a fatigued kind of sore? If you're in school, you've done that stupid beep test or the 12-mile run where your nervous system is just gassed, or is it sharp pain? And I think at that point, you know, that can dictate, hey, you know what? You're sore. Like RJ said, maybe let's throw 45 to 90 feet. What's wrong with J-bands? I mean, you know, nutrients are all shuttled through the blood. So if I can get some blood flow to the areas that are sore, whether that's from doing some ERIRs with a J-band or some light dumbbell work, or even just throwing at like 50, 60% just to get things moving. Because oftentimes, I mean, RJ's got some back issues. I got some back issues. And when I'm stiff, you know, sometimes I'm like, maybe I shouldn't do this in my workout. But no, I just adapt. And I take things out that are going to load my spine more than others. I do some extra back care or arm care for the baseball guys listening in this case. But again, it's like it's a dynamic process that, you know, hopefully your coach is educated on enough to understand like, hey, is that a sharp pain? Because, I mean, at the end of the day, we are looking out for these kids' careers and stuff like that. But you also got the one breed of kid who's, you know, no pain, no gain. I'm a push through. And then you just got the soft kid who's just sore and everything hurts and they're sensitive. Mm-hmm. And I think you just need to know the athlete on that one. But
yeah, I had a conversation yesterday actually with another one of the coaches about pullback kids versus push forward kids.
Yeah.
Like you got to pull back some kids and you got to push forward some kids and you just got to figure out who they are. Right.
100%. Okay.
So I really want to know, because I think like if we're talking about helping kids build their own program or even helping coaches build a program, because like there most teams in BC don't have a pitching coach unless they're PBL, college prep, top level high school baseball. Mm-hmm. Right. If you're like Bantam, we had a guy that came in once every couple weeks. RJ was there once a week. Right. Coming in like. Whatever it was, right? Once a week. And then we had, after you left, we had a guy come in at once every couple weeks to just watch their bullpens, right? Like it was, but me, when I was trying to figure out what to do with these pitchers, I'm a position player first. Like there was full transparency. There was often times where we'd be 10 minutes left and before the sun goes down, I'm like, fuck, we were supposed to do bullpens today. Mm-hmm. Right? like it happened more than one time. And I planned it and everything, and then we'd be okay during BP. We're gonna have to make sure we do that, but then we end up spending, you know, 20 extra minutes on something else earlier on, and then our bullpens get screwed. And I got guys going, "Hey, can I throw a quick pen?" And the sun's halfway down, and it's pitch black outside, right? Like, so it's for a kid or a coach who needs to learn, and I'm one of them, how to prioritize and how to build a program. Is there a step-by-step process that can help them do that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think, and one thing I was thinking about while you were asking about, you know, what should I do with my guys if I'm running them back from January 1st. And I think there's something called the ideal world and then there's the real world. And if we can teach our athletes like, hey, we got 2 hours, we got 50 guys here, we got 30 guys here, whatever it may be. Here's a plyo program. Here's why I want you to do it. I want you to do it on these days because we might be pressed for time. Do it at school. Throw it at the brick wall at school at 7:30 a.m. before you go to class. Dude, I'm from Grand Forks. I literally put a towel up in my garage and would just hit tee or try and throw into it. So, you know, sometimes it's like, yeah, I want to follow this program step by step. And if we get out of whack, it's like, damn. But to me, that's like, that's life. And how can you be fluid with it and adjust? And it's like, all right, this didn't work out. I didn't get bullpens in. I didn't get my bullpen in. Coach Wedge, you suck as a coach. Isaiah, you suck, man. Like, learn how to plan. You know, I could just go home and say, all right, that's good. But if I understand, like, what I want to do with baseball, I'll go home and I'll figure it out. I'll go throw in the snow, or I'll shovel out the batting cage. Like, I, you know, I'll do whatever it takes to get there. And I think that's kind of the approach. But building a throwing program, again, it's so hard to give a one-size-fits-all approach because everyone's so different. But I think having a plan rather than no plan is, I mean, it's ideal. You got
to
do it.
You have to do that.
You have to do it. Like, that's just, you know, it is what it is. And I think when you look at it, just look at stressors as a whole. So on Monday, or so let's use Wedge's team for an example. So Wedge has practice Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
So for me, I'm on-ramping kids who haven't really thrown. They've had low baseball volume. I'm probably doing my heavier throwing Tuesday, Saturday, because now they get more rest in between, and then Thursday's going to be my straight defense, hitting. I'm going to figure out how to get as many reps as I can, and then I'm just going to progress them. So, you know, week one might be 20 throws from 90 feet. Week two might be 25 throws from 90 feet. And I've been trying to calculate this too, because in Kamloops, it's the same setup. We're just in an indoor, but you know, the cage is tall. So can we lengthen out and aim for like a certain part on the cage with a certain intent? And then can we map that out over time? And there's the ideal world and there's the real world. I'm in a cage. I got 2 hours. I got 30 kids. What's the best I can do with what I got? And you just go from there. But I think there has to be a progression, whether it's, you know, again, 20 throws here, then 30, then 40. And what we do with our throwing programs and actually with our lifting programs, and RJ's been through this with me the last couple of months, that fourth month, like, or that fourth week of the month, we've been stressing you out for the prior 3 weeks. Lots of volume, new movements, you're throwing a ton. Again, when we talk about that baseline performance we talked about earlier in the podcast, like, your baseline is down. You're tired, you're exhausted, your body's telling you, like, hey, I need to recover. So we pull back for that fourth week. And when I say pull back, that doesn't mean decrease weight. It's, you know, we'll decrease volume. We'll do three sets instead of four on some stuff, or we'll do a little bit more arm care like we do in RJ's program. And that just lets us recover, come back up. And then that fifth week, we just can continue building. So again, as long as you see that progression with it, and Wedge, I mean, you do this with your hitters all the time. You know, you have this hand path issue. Here's a low level hand path corrective. Once you dominate that, I'm going to give you a medium level hand corrective. And then, you know, we're just going to progress you until we kind of like where you see. And I'm sure the same is with blocking. Like, here's an up the elevator, me flipping it to you. Then here's an up the elevator with a low level machine. And then here's a 95 mile an hour up the elevator.
For the record, I've never once made a kid block 95 miles per hour. I just think that should be,
that's soft. You're soft for that.
Soft. Yeah. That's soft. So soft.
Yeah. I know what you're saying though. Yeah.
Thought you were a prairie guy.
Yeah.
Not this soft Vancouver thing that's spewing out this nonsense.
Man. Oh, I got a story, but I'm not going to tell it right
now. No, you
got
to tell
it. I have a story if you're not going to tell it then.
Well, I remember
you got it?
I'll sum it up very quick. I was doing camps with a guy, and there was an 8-year-old who had never blocked before in his life, and very quickly the machine was humming, and and this kid is literally crying while getting pelted by baseballs over and over and over again. And I was just standing there like, dude, what are you doing? And I couldn't, I was like, do you think maybe we should? And he's like, no, he's got to learn. He's got to get tougher. Okay.
Like, 5-time World Series champion. Oh, I said it. Sorry.
Yeah, he probably listens. So we don't need to cut that. He probably listens.
Yeah.
I remember in Manitoba when I was in high school, it was with the Rookies Baseball Academy. We'd be throwing like a live ABs, right? And we're in this indoor facility that's a little bit run down, to say the least, at the time. And the catcher would be back there, right? The coaches would be behind the catcher, batter in the box. And the coach behind the catcher would just put up a number of fingers, and that's what pitch you're throwing. So the catcher had no idea.
Had no idea,
no oh, idea no. what pitch is coming. And it was
what
an
does
intent.
That work on?
You're seeing the ball.
You just have to read it like a hitter?
You're like, reading it like a hitter inside.
You know what
it
the difference
incredible.
Between a hitter and a catcher is the catcher gets hit by the ball if they don't know what's coming. The well, hitter just misses it.
You want to adapt? You want to die, boy?
That's wild.
You right. want.
Anyway, back on the tracks. Like, when you're – so, okay. Basically, Isaiah, what I'm getting is, like, be aware of the limitations first and foremost. Like, be aware of the of where we're at physically in terms of pain and injury – potential, right? That's the first thing, is what it seems like. And then the second thing is have a plan to try to figure out how to progress.
Yeah.
Well, in the wedge, the results are everything. Like, that's what people pay for. They're not going to come to me if I make them feel good and they throw 3 miles less. You know what I mean? That doesn't make any sense. So the results have to speak for themselves, and the results have to be in line with your program. So if you're constantly testing and retesting, and you see big jumps in performance, then you're like, okay, I'm on to something. And sometimes you got to be patient with that, and it takes years to figure out what that is, which is why they pay Wedge, they pay RJ for one-on-one lessons to get them further, because they have that knowledge. They went through the trial and error. But the result, like, yeah, again, what's my circumstance? Who do I have in front of me? How are my athletes adapting? What kind of questions are they asking me? And at the end of the day, am I getting the results? Is there an increase in velocity or spin rate, or are they commanding the zone, depending on you know, what you're trying to dial in with that guy? But yeah, again, results, results, results. You ain't making it nowhere if you throw 70 poo and
And that's the benefit of having all the technology that a lot of people have nowadays, whether it's a pocket radar or some sort of like the pitching one is almost easier to see results than the hitting one, in my opinion, because a number doesn't lie. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you're running and gunning and you're starting off at, dude, I think my first run and gun series, I was like 80, 84. I'm like, what the fuck? 80, 82. Like, what the fuck is going on? You know what I mean? But then I kept, because I've never done it, right? So, but I kept doing it, and I got to 90, got over 90, and I'm like, okay, that's nice. I'm having fun with this. All right, let's get on the mound now, right? But yeah,
how
results
often,
are everything.
How often / when do you test?
We set a specific day of the week every time. Every week we tested. Yeah, again, because then, and that's we kind of thought about, like, maybe every 2 weeks we can test, but then we also realize it's like, well, we're also working out, we're throwing, we're progressing through our throwing too. Looking back at it, I would say don't start testing probably until we didn't start veloing until week 5, but I would say you don't need to start veloing until week 6. When you get to 300 feet, or when you're used to like a max effort throw kind of thing.
It's so like 70% of the way through your program kind of thing.
Yeah, 70% of the way through.
Don't rush
into
testing?
No. I don't know. Never. Because nothing's more disappointing than like seeing a number that you're not even close to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You set this milestone in your head and you throw it, and you're when you're not ready and you're like, what is that? What's that garbage? Right. But again, my first bullpen, I was 85, 90. You know what I mean? Like, I felt amazing. I was like, okay, like, let's go. Like, I should be able to feel my body in this point. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was feeling the numbers. I saw the numbers. I was like, yeah, for the first bullpen, like, I remember back in Vancouver, my first bullpen was 80, 84. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Right. But I think, again, writing out a plan is the biggest, most important thing about this. I mean, if you have limited time, you can still make time. Or if you're not having to rush,
use the time you have.
Yeah. If you don't have the rush, don't rush. Because again, next thing you know, it's like, okay, let's say you're in week 7, right? And you're like, hey, what do we got today? I don't take a look at the thing. Everyone knows. Okay, well, I already know I have a plyo day today. Okay, so I need to get that going. I have these drills I have to do. All right. And then by that time, the coaches should also have an idea of how to time that out as well, right? Until you get to bullpens are tricky ass days, man. Bullpens are so tricky. Because again, you can't really run through 20, 25 pitches for every single pitcher on your roster in one session. That's only 2 hours, you said? hour and a half after warm-ups and shit?
Yeah, hour and a half total.
Right, unless you have 10 mounds and 10 catchers, you're pretty much hooped.
Yeah, I mean, the younger kids, everybody pitches, right? Like, that's how I want to have the team. Like, we got 20 kids on my team now and 13 pitch. So it's like not all of them are going to have equitable pitching time. That's for sure. Like, I got a handful of kids that I think could be very high potential next level pitchers. Like, got four or five kids that are sniffing 80 as grade 10s, which is decent. And then I got six kids that are sniffing 71 as grade 10s, which is average, right? Like, or below average potentially. And then, you know, a couple kids that are mid 70s, but some kids are also 70 miles per hour off the mound, but they rake. So it's like, okay, you're going to pitch right now, but like, you know, 2 years from now, you're probably not even going to be thinking about the mound too much. Like, you're going to be thinking about how to hit three hole and play shortstop, right? So it's like the equitable time, I'm sure, is different. Like, and that's kind of what I was wondering about the throwing program. If we're talking about relievers, because most of the time, like the guys that are dudes in at my level are going to start. Like, there's not really a swing guy in there because you just don't have the depth of like the good pitchers to have the swing guy. Like, I think I ran an opener one time last season and my opener got shelled.
You guys came back and won that game though, didn't you?
Yeah, we did, but it was still it's such a buzzkill to go down 3-0 at the top of the first, right? And I'm just like, okay, if we can just get through these kids in a 7-inning game, then my starter can come and throw pitch count limit and shit like that. Not to get into it, but anyway, like the inequitable, obviously, like they're not going to have the same amount of innings or the same amount of pitches in their bullpen. So it works in some way, but it's definitely not a cookie cutter for like, okay, everybody's going to throw 30 pitches today. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. No.
Yeah. And you're lucky you got the Rapsodo. If that thing's out there for every pen, I'm pretty sure you can calculate average fastball across
You can.
20 pitches over a month. So you're technically
we don't use it all the time just because it takes time to use. Like,
yeah,
when we're talking about how much time you have, like if we only have an hour and a half and it takes 5 seconds in between pitches minimum for it to read, like sometimes it takes longer. Sometimes the Rapsodo takes like 10 seconds and it's spinning around and we're waiting. Catcher's sitting there waiting, our pitcher's waiting, everybody's waiting for the Rapsodo to catch up just to give us the same 74 mile per hour fastball at 1700 spin rate with 82% spin efficiency over and over and over again. It's like, do we need this every single time? Like, is that really necessary? If we got a guy who's trying to figure out how to throw a curveball, then yeah, it's 100% necessary. But like, just for a routine pen is not super necessary.
No,
unless you're velo building, right? And then that's different. But then maybe you turn it on for 6 pitches.
Yeah.
And then you do the rest of your pen somewhere else.
No, I mean, because everyone knows, I mean, if you throw in a velo pen, then your last, if it's 25 pitches, your last 5 pitches are probably going to be garbo.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's just an example.
Is there anything else that you guys wanted to talk about with this? Did we cover any, is there anything that we didn't cover with building your own thing? I'd love to try to make it simple because this was a lot of information.
Yeah.
Is there a way to make it simple? Is there, like, I know I asked for a step-by-step process, maybe not a step-by-step process to build it, but is there a step-by-step process to evaluate yourself?
You can probably go month by month process if you wanted to. That might almost make more sense instead of thinking of it as like a whole block. Like, I mean, we looked at it like a, like your leading up program and then your on-ramp program, you know what I'm saying? So it was like 2 months there, then a month there, then a month there. If you were to look at it month to month, you can kind of go, all right, I'm going to start at 90 feet. By the end of this month, I want to be at 250 feet. How can I get there that makes sense on paper? Because if it makes sense on paper, I think, you know, it should be okay to make it work in reality.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the simplest way of describing it. And again, trying your best to stay above baseline or staying around baseline at the end of the month.
And listen to your body, I would suppose.
Listening to your body, right? And making sure that you give your guys enough time for pre and post. What do you think, Isaiah?
Drink some water. Drink your water. Eat your food.
Oh.
Recover. Sleep.
Get 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah, get after it, though. Get after it. Don't let us hold you back. Get after it.
Yeah. Party naked.
People want to see a show. Party naked. Do it all.
Drink that Top Rack tequila.
What?
Yeah, for real. That's when he gets really loose with his hips and starts dancing like a fiend. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a monster out there, apparently.
I got moves.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's, I think so. I mean, again, we're going to try our best to be as transparent as we can, because it is a ton of information. That's a ton of information. Yeah,
it is. And, you know, it's tough. It's not easy, I would say, right? Like, you two are professionals. Like, let's make sure we say that. Like, RJ, you're a professional pitcher. Isaiah, you're a professional trainer. Like, you train as a profession. You get paid to do what you do, right? So I think it's important to acknowledge that. Like, if you're a kid making your own program, have patience with yourself, because it's not easy to do. I remember I had to do a project when I was in high school where we had to program ourselves. And it was really valuable, but did I hate it. Oh, my God. It was the worst. We had to create goals. We had to create long-term goals, short-term goals. We had to talk about, you want to throw 85 off the hop by your end of your grade 10 year? How? And it's like, how? What do you mean how? I'm just going to do it. Like, but it's not really how it works, right? So have patience, I suppose, and be committed to yourself enough that you're going to put the time into A, plan it, and then B, see it through. Like, finish that shit. Don't just go 2 days, or don't just go a week in and then be like, I'm just going to air it out. Like, if you're going to commit, commit. Don't go halfway, right? No. So
there's something to say about writing your own program too, that like you want to follow it, because you're like, man, because this took me a while to write too, actually. Mm-hmm. A lot of time, a lot of effort. I was gassed after I finished writing. I was like, man, I'm exhausted. What
the fuck? Yeah.
I think one last piece of advice I can give, and this is probably the most important in my opinion, is if you don't know, look it up online.
Yeah.
Dr. Google.
Find out.
Yeah, right. Because again, I found mine on Jaeger Sports and Driveline and Cressy and
you Tread. So many resources.
Dude, Tread. Wow. Tread's YouTube
They're all
sensational.
Over, man. Oh, yeah. Tread is great.
God, man.
Great. Yeah.
No, they do an amazing job, because they have actual pictures. Just like, I think one of the main guys, I can't remember his name, but he describes and shows you how to do everything and why and how and like, the reason it's amazing. Yeah. And he shows you the throws. You're like, oh, well, fuck. And he's also left-handed. So I'm like, oh, fuck, he can do that. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
It's 20. Cool. I got one thing. It's 2022. Yep. You got everyone. I think, is it? What? Oh yeah, it is. It is. You got the battery on Instagram. You got the battery on Apple. You got us everywhere. You can literally DM the boys and say, hey, Isaiah, man, what you said was stupid. I don't get it. Can you elaborate? And I will send you a voice message and explain it until you understand it. I mean, that's why we're here. And if we got to do a part two for a different set of people or for a single pitcher that reaches out to us, like, we're going to do that. But yeah, I mean, if you don't ask, we just assume we're elite at what we do.
Yeah, more questions, the better.
Change.
Yeah.
Where did you go?
Yeah.
Everybody must agree if no one said anything.
Yeah. It's funny because I always tell my guys here too, I always tell them, I was like, listen, if you don't understand, ask me. Because if I don't have the answer, then we need to talk about it. I'll look it up. And I've been proven wrong here a few times, actually. Not from guys on the team, but by fucking Google got me.
Google gets you, man.
Talking mechanics. I was talking mechanics, actually, with my buddy Potsy. And we sat down, talked about it. And I was like, I think it's like this. I've never really thought about it. I just kind of do it. And then I went online and looked it up, and I was wrong. And I was like, oh, sorry. Remember what we talked about yesterday where I thought I was right? No, it's like this. Let's do this now. And it worked out. Yeah.
Yeah. And be aware of people that don't say they're wrong.
Golly. And just smile and wave at those people.
Another can of worms.
Golly.
All right. Okay, fellas. That's a good talk. That's a long time. Longer than we thought, but good. It was a good amount. That's it for the first installment of Battery Talks. Is that a work in progress name? Are we good with that name? Battery Talks.
We'll
let the people decide.
Don't put that on the internet. That might be horrendous.
Did you hear about that boat that got named something hilarious? I can't remember what it got named.
Didn't they go to the press or something like that?
It was in England or something like that, and they like put out a thing that was like, "Hey, the public, help us name this boat, like this huge boat." And they named it something just so stupid.
Like the cockwalker. And they had to do it. Like Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
All right. Okay, guys.
Recording stopped.
Bye.
Welcome to the Battery.
Spin!